Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Dave Davies in for Marty Moscoane. We're speaking with poet and performer Michael Mack. His one-man play, Hearing Voices Speaking in Tongues, will be performed at the Philadelphia Fringe Festival. And if you'd like to see it, it'll be at the Mum Puppet Theater on Arch Street Sunday evening at 6:30, Monday at 3:30 in the afternoon. And the number to call for tickets, 215-413-1318. Again, that's 215-413-1318. And the number to call if you'd like to talk to Michael Mack about mental illness or about the issues that we're discussing, the number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Michael Mack, you were going to give us a poem from this play. Give us a little introduction or just... Actually, it's pretty self-explanatory, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So, Go right ahead. Let me just jump into it. She helped me slide the mattress back. Off the bus from school, I found our front door open. My mother paced inside, arms crossed, with something to show me. I followed her crooking finger, her billowy flowered skirt upstairs to my bedroom door. Go ahead, she said. Open it. Mattress, clothes, everything on the floor. Chair tipped over, drawers dumped out. Checkers, pennies, books and model planes swept off the shelves. I looked at that lopsided heap, everything I owned, then looked at my mother, her flushed and jittery face, brilliant crimson lips, and I knew what to do. Gently, drop my lunch bag, circle my arms around her waist, press my cheek to her belly. Thank you, Mama, thank you. All afternoon I folded clothes, stacked toys and books. My mother downstairs sang hymns in the kitchen, cooking a surprise for my father. And what I can't describe, I can only say. How happy I felt. How loved.
Michael Mack, how old were you when this experience occurred?
I was a little bit older. I think that I was about 7 at that time. And one of the remarkable things to me about that event, and really the thing that the impulse behind this poem, was that instant where I really did know what to do.
Or you dropped your
yes,
lunch bag.
It came to
you
me.
You hugged your mom.
Yes. It just came to me as a very clear intuition about how to deal with this untenable situation.
And you said, thank you, Mom.
Yes.
What were you thanking her for?
I was thanking her because I recognized that her impulse behind it was for my benefit. That she had trashed my room, but that she did it for my welfare, for me to learn how to tidy up my room. Now, granted, her response to my leaving a messy room in the morning was pretty extreme.
Oh, that's what had happened.
Yes.
This was a schizophrenic form of discipline.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess I should have started with that.
Okay.
But it was a very poignant moment for me in remembering it. And what I remember right now, as I think about it, is the warmth coming off of her belly with my cheek on.
How did she respond when you did that? Do you remember?
I remember that she put her hand on the back of my head and patted my head. And so it was a very tender moment in the midst of a lot of chaos.
So in her world, she was showing you love, affection, and commitment.
Right. And I responded.
One of the things that I think all of us look to our parents for is stability and predictability. I mean, that rock that we can rely on in a world that is unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's clear in this and in the earlier piece that you wrote that your life at home was, if anything, unpredictable. I mean, that your mom could do these things which defied explanation and had bizarre consequences. What was that like for you to have that lack of stability and unpredictability at home? How do you think it affected you?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that because a couple of weeks ago, the Philadelphia Inquirer came out with a big story called When Your Mother is Crazy. It's written by Gloria Hoffman, and in this story, she is interviewing kids who are going through just that situation. And I found it very striking, very moving, to read in their responses to questions like, what's it like living at home? To read in their responses the same kind of things that I was feeling when I was a kid. There's an incredibly progressive program that's happening here in Philadelphia right now. And it was through that program that Gloria did this article. This program is run by the Mental Health Association of Southeastern Pennsylvania. In particular, there is a program called the Tech Family Center. And it's run by Edie Mannion. And in this program, kids who are going through this kind of situation that I went through have a place to go. It's not a residency house, but it's a place to go where they can talk with other kids who are going through the same kinds of things and talk with counselors, Jean Hayden, who can guide them through this process. And that is one thing that I did not have when I was growing up. There were none of these support groups. Mental illness was a hush-hush subject. People didn't talk about it if it was in the family because it brought a tremendous amount of stigma to the family. And I think it could have made all the difference had we had that kind of, those kind of programs.
You were on your own to figure out what
we were on our own. My father was on his own, and his only real connection to possible solutions were through the psychiatrists. And typically those were state hospital psychiatrists. As far as, there was nothing like the insurance parity that is coming now into effect, insurance parity for mental illness. My father's insurance ended after a month of health care for mental illness, and the bottom dropped out.
And the treatment, in any case, was for your mom, not for those of you who had to live with this.
Absolutely.
Right. Let's get to a few callers. Again, the number, if you'd like to join us, is 1-888-477-WHYY. We're speaking with Michael Mack about his one-man play, Hearing Voices, Speaking in Tongues. Linda is with us from Gloucester County. Are you there, Linda?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, hi, thanks for waiting.
I appreciate you doing the program because I myself suffer mental illness.
Yeah.
Linda, I'm glad you called in then.
I'm a schizoaffective. That's schizophrenia and, in my case, depression.
Uh-huh.
I'm in treatment. So, thanks for the show.
So, you want other folks to know about this and be sensitive to the issues?
Yes.
Any questions for Michael Mack?
Nope.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in, Linda. Thank you. And I guess you get some of that, don't you? I mean, you perform this... I know you perform the play a lot before mental health professionals.
Yes.
Different from a general audience, I would imagine, right?
It is different because the focus for their coming together it's more focused. I've done this both for mental health professionals and for mental health consumers, so folks like Linda who come to some of these conferences have an opportunity to see the work. And a lot of wonderful, I've gotten a lot of great input from these folks about their own experiences with schizophrenia, and it has informed creation of this work because I want it to be as representative as it can be. Myself, I haven't had schizophrenia or a major mental illness, so I feel like as an artist, as a poet, I have to take some liberties in order to try and find a way into that world. And so when folks give me their feedback, it's a tremendous help.
Paul is with us from Philadelphia. Are you there, Paul?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Michael, I wanted to ask, let me say first. I just recently met a woman who, just in talking with her, I realized she's paranoid, schizophrenic. I don't have a psychological educational background, but I could just see it, you know. She's in her 40s, I guess. What would you recommend as far as reading material besides seeing your play? What would you recommend as far as reading material for me to help understand her better?
Well, there is a book that has become something of the Bible in this
field.
It's called Surviving Schizophrenia, and it's written by Dr. E. Fuller Torrey, T-O-R-R-E-Y, He was a one-time administrator for the National Institute of Mental Health. And this book is directed at family members. And Dr. Torrey was affiliated at one time also with the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, which is the largest grassroots organization dedicated to helping people with mental illness and their families. And so I think that that would be a great first step, and I'm sure that in there he has a lot of references that you can go to from there.
Okay. My friend is getting care. She told me she's getting care from Friends Hospital in Philadelphia here. Are you from Philadelphia, or where are you from?
I'm from the Boston area, although okay. I was born in Baltimore, Washington, that area.
All right. Well, then, okay. Friends Hospital is the oldest psychiatric hospital in the United States. It's in Northeast Philadelphia, and has a very good reputation. But just a little, I talked with her this one time when we were talking about this. She said that all basically her psychiatrist does is just give her medication. She is not under any kind of... She's not getting any kind of talk therapy or whatever.
Okay, Paula, let's get a response here. We don't want to get into every case in great detail, but Michael Mack, I'm sure you've learned a lot about growth in treatments for schizophrenia too, right?
Yes. Well, there are a lot of different treatments, and the best approach is to tailor a treatment schedule for each person. Certainly medications have come a long way in the last 20 years, are much more sophisticated, and their side effects are far fewer than they used to be. But I think that also talk therapy and other forms of therapy, peer groups, provide a tremendous amount of help and support. And I think that, if I could quote the doctor who I referred to a little bit earlier, E. Fuller Torrey, said that he thought that the greatest advance in the treatment of mental illness beyond the psychiatric medications is family support groups. And I think it is that finding a way out of isolation and finding a way to share your experience not only with your peers, people who are experiencing similar things, but also with healthcare professionals, counselors, I think it's tremendously beneficial. And when I think about my mother's experience, and particularly in the last 15 years of her life, which was really the most healing, I think that what made all the difference in terms of the quality of her life was the communities that she lived in. There was one that she lived in for about 10 years, and then the last one she lived for about 6 years, I guess. And
when you say community, you mean the living setting?
That's right. Yeah. She was living in a group home. She was never able to live without some kind of assisted care. But in these homes, in stark contrast to her experiences in the state hospitals earlier in her life, in these homes she had a respect and a dignity and a place. And I think it just made all the difference because it was a garden in which she could flower.
There is some, I know the history of some schizophrenics is that as, you know, it seems to flower in, I guess, what, early 20s or late teens, and sometimes seems to get much, much better in older age. Did she?
I think that she did get better. I think that was in part due to what you say. There is this tendency toward what I've heard called a schizophrenic burnout, where the illness just kind of burns itself out somewhere in a person's 40s or 50s. So I think that is so. Also, as an older person, she had less energy, so less energy to get into mischief. But that's in stark contrast, that idea about the schizophrenia just kind of burning itself out. When my mother first became ill in the 60s, the prevailing notion then was that it was, in essence, a death sentence. And that I remember my father telling me that he had a psychiatrist advise him at one point that the chances are my mother's condition would only get worse and worse, and that she would probably live out her life in a state hospital. And as you can imagine, for a young man recently married with four young kids, that was a hard bit of news to hear.
Michael Mack is with us. He is the author and performer of Hearing Voices, Speaking in Tongues. It is being performed at the Philadelphia Fringe Festival Sunday and Monday. If you'd like to call and talk to Michael, the number is 1-888-477-9499. Ivy is with us from Philadelphia. Ivy, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, thanks for waiting.
You know, my question initially was, did you feel that you were betraying your mother by this work on stage? But that statement, respect, dignity, and a place to flower. Oh my goodness. We have to make people more aware, and I guess this is the only way to do it. You know, everyone deserves a place, respect and dignity. How did she feel about it personally? Because you really didn't... How did she feel about your doing this play?
Well,
seeing it, you said she didn't want to see it, but how did she feel about your doing this?
She wasn't that interested. You address a concern that I have had since I began writing it, and especially since I began performing it, which is, am I appropriating somebody else's experience? Am I doing justice to her experience, and am I presenting it in a way that that serves her life story? I can tell you, Ivy, that when I first started writing it, the impulse behind my writing it, and we're talking maybe 15 years ago, the impulse behind my writing it was a feeling of anger and feeling like, look what kind of a crappy childhood I had. But what was interesting was the transformation that not only I took, but that the work took over time as I found myself investigating more and more my mother's experience and my father's experience. And what it has brought me to, and what it has brought the work to, is the Philadelphia Weekly called it this week a work of redemption.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yes. Writing is purging, it's healing. And so I think you've done a good thing. Oh, this is so great. All right, I hope to see it.
Really Ivy, if you come, introduce yourself.
I certainly will.
Thanks.
All right, you take good care. Okay. Oh, you know what else I wanted to say?
Okay, quick.
God bless your father.
Oh,
thanks. Because he could have deserted the family, not understanding this, you know?
Yeah.
And he didn't do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Ivy. David is with us from Philadelphia. David, yeah, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Good morning.
Go right ahead, yeah.
Oh, thanks. I want to... thank you for the show. It's very informative. I am a mental health clinician in one of the county mental health programs, and I have a question. The folks I deal with are primarily very chronically, you know, very seriously ill, and I notice a lot the idea of stigma, that they sense a stigma. So in my practice, I try to really humanize them. See them as people, not the mental patient. I'm trying to get a sense of whether was that your experience? Did you come across the clinical folks were at least attempting to humanize, or was it more of just, oh, mental patient, you know, go take other pills?
Okay, let's hang on to that thought, David, because we're up against a break, and we'll get Michael Mack to answer it in just a moment. This is Radio Times, and we're speaking with Michael Mack about his one-man play, Hearing Voices Speaking in Tongues, being performed this week at the Fringe Festival in Philadelphia. A few lines open if you want to give us a call. The number's 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'll be right back.